Hello, happy Monday. Thank you so much for joining us for this chat. I hope you enjoyed the sunshine and the fact we're allowed to exercise a bit more and escape. I know for me it's been a bit of a wonderful respite actually having a chance to explore a bit more and release some of cabin fever. Today's going to be a really, really fascinating chat that I'm so excited for, partly because it's the first time we're having multiple guests on the podcast, but also it's the first time we're having an orchestra on. So we're going to find out lots about how orchestra's doing things during lockdown. And for me, there's been one orchestra in particular who've been really leading the way with how online content has been distributed and connected with audiences during this time. So I'm so excited to have the Royal Scottish National Orchestra on, and we have Alistair Mackey, Chief Exec, and DeVore, who's Principal Trombonist. Thank you so much for being here. It really is hugely appreciated.
Likewise, David. Thank you for having us.
Absolute pleasure. So this could be an interesting one, because I normally ask people to define themselves at the beginning of these conversations. So partly to save me writing an intro, but also I think it's quite interesting to find out how people define themselves. So Alistair, how would you define yourself and your role within RSNO?
Well, I'm the chief exec of the RSNO, but when you ask me how I define myself, I think that's a bit of a challenge. For 30 years, I was a trumpet player, and it was a simple answer to that question. You know, I play the trumpet. And in the last year, I've taken a big change in direction. And it's an interesting question, how do you define yourself? And as a musician, what you do defines you so strongly. And I think for decades, I was defined by who I was as a player. And it's quite challenging to redefine yourself. But it's a fantastic challenge. So, yeah, I was a player in London, Philharmonic Orchestra, London Sinfonietta, Royal College, etc. And then for the past year, chief exec in Scotland. And obviously, I am Scottish. I returned to Scotland after some 30 years, a fascinating time, an amazing time for the RSNO, and a very interesting time for Scotland as a country. And lots of interesting things about how Scotland as a nation defines itself, how it uses culture. To define its identity, and I think it's at a stage when it's really questioning its identity, and I think culture always has a place to play in that. So that's been fascinating. It's been very strange not picking up a brass tube and blowing it every morning like I did for so many years, but I've tried to kind of break the addiction. It's gone in the case. It very, very rarely comes out. But the RSNO as an organisation, it's in amazing shape. It's artistically very, very strong, with Thomas Sundergaard, Aleem Chan leading the way. The players are fabulous. And it's an organisation that is open, I think, to ideas, open to change, excited to look at what it can do, prepared to invest in new things and do things new ways. So, yeah, very excited. I've had a fantastic year. It wasn't quite the year planned. I didn't see a global pandemic on the horizon, and it's thrown us in a very different direction, but we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But It's an interesting time, and for me, how do I define myself? I am a chief exec. I'm a recovering trumpet player.
That's a fantastic way of putting it, and also you've proved me right that it's really fascinating to hear how people define themselves and what they do. So, DeVore, how do you define yourself as a trombonist and what you do in the world?
Well, I could start with borrowing Alistair's answer and just saying that I play the trombone and I blow down a brass tube, but... you know, playing in an orchestra is about many more things than that. As well as being in the orchestra, I'm on the artistic committee and I'm one of the player directors as well, which means I take part in the board meetings for defining strategy and things like that. And yeah, it's the definition changes all the time. You always have a simple picture in the beginning, and it grows and grows and grows. And right now, it is absolutely exploding. So I'd hope I can define myself as an orchestral trombonist, but also someone who keeps active out with the orchestra and tries and bring in influences into this great institution, which it's a thing that can be hard to move along sometimes. But there's a good reason for that, is because what we have already is very good. So it's a challenge to see how we could renew it and how it can become even better.
Fantastic. Well, as you say, you've already got something very incredible with your orchestra already. And that's something that has been impacted quite significantly. So what were RSNO supposed to be up to during this time if there wasn't a global pandemic?
Well, this week we were going to start preparations for our season finale, which was going to be Verdi Requiem with Thomas Sundergaard. But yeah, alas, no longer. That's about it. We it's been, 2 months now, and I hear from other colleagues all the time, messages are flying around saying, this week we were supposed to do this and that week we're supposed to be doing this and that. So it's still in my head. I'm still mentally preparing for it, even if it's not going to happen.
Very true. And obviously you've been impacted quite a lot. Alistair, what sort of impact has this pandemic had for the orchestra? Because obviously it's something that no one foresaw, and it's quite a turbulent thing to go through in a very short space of time.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious things, we can't gather together and perform. We can't gather the staff together in one place or the players. So, I mean, like everybody else, we are finding new ways of communicating, and that's interesting in itself. I think one of our board members right at the start said, this is a burning platform. This is a time to jump. And for many months, we've been lining up our digital activity. We employed a team back in November, a cameraman, a sound engineer. We got the cameras, we had all the kit. And we began running tests, recording. So I think what this time gave us was an excuse to go forward further and faster than we were perhaps comfortable with. But we went forward with this view that if we got it wrong, people would forgive us in a way that they might not forgive us outside of a pandemic. And that presented an opportunity. And I'm very glad we did what we did when we did. We've learned so much from it. Far from perfect, of course, but it's been an amazing experience, a slightly frightening experience. Just suddenly, you know, we're very busy. We have meetings every week, but we are talking about completely different things than I thought we were talking about at this point. You know, we're talking about how we repurpose music in the autumn so we can get back to live performance. We're talking about how we do that. We're talking about all the learning from our digital activity. But I think, I mean, some days, of course, I think I'm like everyone else, you wake up slightly defeated by the challenges ahead. But I'd like to think most days you wake up trying to find opportunities and trying to embrace the challenges of what are there. I've absolutely no doubt that music will come out of this in a different place. The classical music business will have to exit this in a different way. And I'm absolutely confident that it will be the better for it in time.
Very true. And one thing I've mentioned before is that the orchestra world hasn't really changed a lot over the last 100 years, when the world has changed a lot, in particular thinking about various financial crashes we've had in sort of the beginning of this millennium, and also then in the 1980s and 70s. And we didn't necessarily see the big fallout or impact in, say, like losing Woolworths or Goldman Sachs and those big organisations that fell by the wayside. So it's interesting seeing that we're now in a situation where we are going to have to change and do things. And as you say, it's potentially a nice element of synchronicity for you, where you were experimenting and having test recordings and you weren't having to completely go from a standing start, but still probably a bit further behind than you would have wanted to in an ideal world. So I'm very curious, you were one of the first orchestras I saw to really take the bull by the horns. So in the UK, I think it was around the 10th or so that lockdown was, an informal lockdown was started, then March 23rd was the proper lockdown. And on the 23rd, you also announced that you were then doing various challenges from home and online content. You were going straight from the go. What sort of drove that decision to jump straight in straight away? Was that from the musicians, from the administrators, or a combined approach?
I think everything was combined. I don't think any one person can take the credit. I think we did get off quickly. We were talking about various larger projects. We were talking about a website for orchestra, for example. And the idea of challenges within that website had already been spoken about and mentioned. We were talking about trying to stream a whole season, which I don't think any UK orchestra has done yet. And so the Friday Night Club came out of that greater aspiration. So, you know, the first one we did was the drums before the lockdown. And the idea initially was just, how can you make some instruments from what you've got at home? So I phoned up John, percussion player, and said, can you do a little thing in this? And he said, well, actually, there's a samba band. Why don't we do a samba? So he came in with the idea of a samba. And we meant to record it in the studio. But then when we got to the kitchen, the lad started banging bits and pieces. And someone put something in the microwave, and it beeped and said, hey, that can be the click track to bring us in. And someone else, and it all got a bit silly, and we thought, actually, this could be quite fun. So it was quite spontaneous, the scene in the kitchen. And one of my favorite images of what we've put out was Paul Filbert when he hit the bucket at the end. We gave him a little solo to play on a bucket, and he got a bit excited and hit it too hard and smashed the bottom out of it. It was a great moment. But it really, I mean, all the challenges, the players have come with ideas, we give them a brief, And I mean, Davor can talk more about this, but we meet every week on Zoom and people chuck in ideas and we try and shape them into something meaningful. But it's been a real collaborative effort.
Absolutely. Alistair, he doesn't tell the full story here either, because, of course, on the 10th, we knew that we were likely to face a lockdown. And on the 11th, I got a phone call from him to show up at the RSNO Center to start filming stuff. So I'll have to say that it's definitely a teamwork among the whole orchestra. But Alistair has showed some incredible leadership in this and just getting it going. You were saying before that you're never quite ready to start it. This is the kind of impetus that, you know, I guess we needed. I was present at the recording when the bucket was smashed. And yeah, it was a weird time because I wondered, oh my God, how long are we going to have to sustain all this? And can we do it? At that time, I thought, you know, even if it's going to last 3 weeks, you know, can we produce enough material and fast enough? Now it's lasted for, 10 nearly, and, you know, it doesn't seem to be a problem at all. So we've found out new things that we didn't know we could do.
Certainly. And as a musician and talking to your colleagues, what sort of difference has it made that you're still able to create content and have an artistic output during this time rather than sitting at home twiddling your thumbs?
I think it's absolutely critical. First of all, for the orchestra to show that we're still there and thinking of ways to get through it. In some ways, this first challenge, you know, first of all, saying hello, we're here, I think we've managed. But going forward, I'm much more excited about how we're actually going to come out of this. And that's, I think, when we're going to see some much more, you know, a lot more interesting creativity coming from us, but also from many other places. There will come a sort of a halfway point where the lockdown is finished. To be honest, I was scared of that in the beginning, but I'm actually quite excited about that right now. I think we're going to have a chance to try lots of ideas that have been floating around now in the weekly Zoom calls that we have with Alistair, but also ideas that have been, you know, floating about for many years that we now have a chance to try. And I'm sure lots of what we're learning right now, both the ideas and the material that we're producing, is something we can use after Corona as well.
Certainly. It really is truly amazing to see. So I think it'd be good for people who've not seen any of the content you've been putting out to just quickly run through the sort of things that you've done. So one thing you mentioned was the Friday nightclub. What is the Friday nightclub?
Well, the Friday nightclub, I mean, our Edinburgh season concerts are a Friday night. And it's a nice end to the week, the office week, and you go and you have a drink with the supporters and the mezzo suite at Edinburgh, and the Usher Hall is a fabulous place to hear concerts and you sit and listen to a concert. So, I mean, we wanted to make sure that kind of reference point in people's week was retained. So basically, Friday Night Club, we have concerts that we screened. Most of the initial ones we screened as tests for our digital team and our equipment. And we screened one half of the concert at 7:30 on a Friday night. And we've been doing virtual mezzo suites, virtual bars, where our supporters come and gather and have a catch-up and a chat. And Thomas, our conductor, has stopped into these. Davour, other musicians have stopped in. And it's been a fantastic way to keep enjoying music and to keep everyone connected. But I think, I mean, I don't know about anyone else, but you wake up and you don't know what day of the week it is sometimes, you know?
I didn't realize it was a bank holiday until like this morning when I saw everyone else having a day off.
Same.
All the clips that get sent around, I saw a spoof of Mastermind and the first question was, so what day of the week is it? You know, I think that's a bit what it's like. So it's nice on a Friday night, and people have been telling us, oh, on a Friday, we say, what are we going to wear on Friday night, you know, for the Friday night club? And people put on a nice shirt or whatever, and they watch the program and they have a chat. And there's a lot of other, I mean, Davour has been leading some online chats, you know, meeting his old colleagues. And I think it's just a great way to stay connected, to keep music in your life. Music is inspiring, you know, culture is inspiring. And it's to have a world without it really isn't acceptable. So it's just a nice point in the week.
Very true. And what I've loved seeing as well is in the comments section, there'll be various different people watching who didn't realise they were both watching at the same time. And you can see them go, oh, hello, I haven't spoken to you for ages. And they'll start chatting away and have like a little sub thread. And it's almost becoming a meeting place in the same way as if it was a physical meeting place and you bump into someone at a concert hall, which is, I think, very different from the temptation of just putting up a live stream concert and walking away and not stimulating that engagement, which is, I know, it's very tempting to do, but going that extra mile does seem to have really paid off.
Yeah, no, it's been great fun. I mean, my favourite was we broadcast Nemi Yarvi, and then he posted some hearts or something, and then his son Pavel Yarvi posted a little comment from somewhere. You know, it was amazing when you see who's watching and who you're reaching. It was really, really meaningful.
Massively. So, Devor, what are these challenges that you've been doing, and have you been partaking in any of them?
Absolutely. Well, I produced one of them. That was also an idea of Alistair's when he started that. That every Wednesday we publish challenges on Facebook. And it's been a very wide spectrum of challenges that have been coming out. I did one, which was about breathing. Sorry.
It's all right. You're just demonstrating the breathing.
Yeah, I was demonstrating breathing that you need for playing brass instruments, but the kind of breathing challenges that anyone can do, and they're super healthy. I thought I did really well, but I got beaten within 7 minutes of the challenge going online by a 9-year-old. So, you know, ouch. but yeah, that's another one of these weekly things. I like the fact that there's a rhythm to it and people have something to come back to. And these challenges have made it much further than we thought as well. They're being used in distance learning in different schools and all that. So that's been a really good one to do. And then the newest one that's come out is the Solo Sunday, where a single musician from the orchestra records a piece that means something to them and presents it as a little bit like Friday night, but it's more informal, much shorter kind of thing. But it's very good for a Sunday afternoon.
Certainly. And I think as well, when you're looking at an orchestra, you tend to not forget, but just not necessarily associate the individuals with doing solo concerts in the same way. And you can go and see an orchestra for 30, 40 years and never hear a solo from or see what their favourite pieces are or their individual artistic output. So have you found that this is now showcasing a new artistic element for individuals from the orchestra, and is that helping their creativity?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's not like that wasn't happening before, because all the musicians do things out with the orchestra normally, of course. And I suppose the Solo Sunday could be an expression for that. We have activities out with, which a lot of the pieces that are going to come on Solo Sundays are probably going to have much more to do with that. I started thinking about that as well, because, you know, in an orchestra, part of the game is to present a sort of a corporate brand true expression all the time. But that's certainly something that's getting challenged now as well. And it can be a bit daunting to challenge that old stereotype or sort of culture of how an orchestra runs. But it's definitely something which is worth doing, and which is something we can explore way more than we're doing right now.
Massively.
Yes. I like is storytelling. You know, I love stories. I like to know people's lives and what they're thinking. And, you know, Lena was the first, she's a Polish lady at the front of our first violin section. And she would normally go home to Poland at Easter, and she was telling the story of that, what, you know, that loss and playing a melody from her childhood. And, you know, I like people's stories. I'm interested in people. I'm interested in how they arrived in Glasgow, you know, what they do. And actually going through our programming, you know, next year, we were trying to tell stories. We had a Polish theme, as it happens, you know, telling stories of the Polish communities in Scotland, telling stories of the war. You know, I love putting music into context of people's lives and then the stories around their lives. It's a great way to frame music.
Massively. Well, it's great to see just how much you've managed to do in such a short space of time. Obviously, there will have been some challenges to doing this. So from the musician side of things, what challenges have there been in filming and recording music on your own or at distance? And also, how is the behind the scenes, how is the orchestra admin world managing to keep moving and keep the wheels turning now that everyone's separated and not in the office?
Well, first of all, in the rush in the beginning to get going was certainly full of a lot of trepidation. We're used to record with professionals taking care of all those things, and now we have to learn that. And I can say for certain that a lot of us have learned a lot more about that. Turns out that people have a lot of equipment lying unused at home, which they thought one day they were going to use, and that day has happened now. There's been a lot of communication between musicians with technical help. Someone's very good at doing video, and someone's better at doing audio. Sending audio files back and forth to have a listen. Should we adjust this? Should we do that? So yeah, that's a challenge that I think we can call it overcome. And on the administration side, I'm from where I'm sitting right now, I think probably on the administration, they're working harder than ever. It's quite impressive to see how much stuff goes on in the background. And there is a lot more stuff going on in the background than you can see, because as well as our online activity outward, we're also keeping engaged with groups that are involved with the orchestra. For example, the chorus meets up, I think it's every week or every 2 weeks. I had a meeting together with the community orchestra, which is something that I lead in the RSNO, where amateurs come along and play on their own. And this week, we're reaching the end of the takeover project as well. That was originally going to be a project where a group of young people come in and take over the whole orchestra. They do everything from conducting and playing in the orchestra to being the chief exec and artistic planning and logistics. That, of course, couldn't happen the same way. So our education team managed to turn that around very quickly, where it's now become more of a creative project, but where the students are responsible for every aspect of producing that. And I'm sure we'll see some results from that soon online as well.
Definitely. I think it's been really fascinating to see how people are using this time to connect in really unusual ways. And you see that it's people accepting that there are challenges, but also that, as you mentioned earlier, Alistair, that people are going to be much more receptive during this time, and they're going to be much more willing and supportive, even if the camera is not perfect or the recording isn't 100%. They're going to want to support and have that social and human engaged side of things, which is truly fantastic. So,
that I often think about is, you know, I grew up in a brass band culture. And if you look at this brass band movement in this country, it's incredible. It's a fantastic institution. But that grew up a situation where you worked down a mine, you worked in a factory, you worked in darkness, you had your senses suppressed. And when you got to the surface, the need to create, the need to connect with music was just so powerful. You know, and that's what that whole culture grew out of. And I do think at the moment, when you take something away, you realize really the value of it. And when you can't sit in a hall and share the experience of music with other people, that's a huge loss, and you realize that you really need that, you know, for it's got such value. So I think we will come out of this energized and appreciative, and I certainly feel that. I can't wait to be back in a hall with other people listening to music. I can't wait. I mean, it's been great. You know, Zoom meetings are now part of life. And the world will change. I mean, I'm sure everyone, I mean, why do you go to an office 5 days a week when you can stay at home and meet in Zoom and be much more efficient? But I'll be very glad not to Zoom for a while. I'll be very glad to meet some other human beings and to share some music. You know, I'm ready for it now, for sure.
Definitely. I think everyone's in need of like a digital detox for at least a week or so after this, and just sort of, yeah, switch off, not have to sort of try and shout at it. One thing I noticed as well is that at the end of meetings now, everyone waves bye on Zoom. And I've never left a meeting in my life and actually just waved as I'm going out the room. It's such an unusual, bizarre etiquette that's now happened, which is really strange. So that sort of brings me on nicely to one thing I was curious to hear your thoughts on. And I know it's very hard to have a crystal ball at the moment, but do you see any big changes for how orchestras and classical music works in the future? You mentioned about Zoom obviously being a thing that means that don't have to travel as much. One of my thoughts was that potentially touring is going to be impacted, and that maybe that having more local artists and soloists will be one of the things that happens in the interim. Do you have any predictions or thoughts as to how music will be working? Again, crystal ball, this could earn you a lot of money if you've got an answer. But how do you think the world's going to look for us afterwards?
I think touring is very interesting. I think there are environmental agendas coming to the fore. I mean, is it really acceptable to fly hundreds of musicians around the world as much as we have done? And that's very challenging for so many orchestras, particularly London. I think, you know, where I used to work, it was a crucial part of the economics of the institutions. But I really question now more than ever whether that level of international touring will be viable or acceptable. And I think for me, the interesting thing, I think the conversation around digital has been very polarized. People saying, oh, you can make money. People saying you can't make money. People saying this, people saying that. I think it's inevitable that digital is integrated into arts organizations. I think it will be integrated in much more subtle ways than we had appreciated before. I think it will be used in ways that we're only beginning to uncover. So I cannot see everything being the same after this. I think there is learning and experiences we've had that will not go into reverse. And absolutely, I mean, simple things. I don't think we should be 5 days a week in an office. Why drive in? Why pay for parking and rail fares and all the rest of it? You know, we can be much more efficient in how we work. And I think orchestras, again, symphony orchestras live as one unit most of the time. But the value in being in small groups and being creative individually, what that brings back to the whole orchestra is incredible. And I hope at that SNO and other orchestras, all these musicians like Davor, who've done these creative things, will come back wanting to do that more, wanting that to be an integral part of their lives. They'll come back as richer musicians for that, and they'll bring that back to the orchestra, and that will be, we will all benefit.
I absolutely agree with Alistair when he says that. I mean, these ideas that are coming now, it's not like they've all been boiled up over the past few weeks. It's something that musicians, I think, will have wanted to do for many years. For example, when the new RSNO Centre, our new home, was built, it was built with the capacity to produce a lot more digital stuff, and we thought that was great. But then when we came in, we found it hard to produce for the reasons that we talked about before. And, you know, if you look at the name of the orchestra, Royal Scottish National Orchestra, we belong to the whole nation, and it's very hard for us to get out everywhere. But we've shown, I think, now more than anything to ourselves that we can diversify quite a lot more than we thought, first of all. So I think mainly there is something that's going to stay after this as well. And, you know, that's certainly a welcome change. Yeah, but we're also going to return to normal. The desire is to get back into that hall and play. So everything that we're producing now is, I think personally should point that way, because it doesn't really replace what we already do. It just adds to it. So yeah, I think that's about that.
Very true.
Can I add something as well? Because I think what many people don't appreciate is you get a job in an orchestra, perhaps in your early 20s. And there's a real possibility that job doesn't change for 40 years. And, you know, musicians, they want to express themselves. I think they want to grow. And it's very difficult sometimes to grow in an orchestra chair. And I think it's really important that orchestras find ways for the musicians and their staff to develop and to grow an organisation, and not just push repeat for the entirety of your career. And, that, you know, in London, the self-governing orchestras, of course, you've got the chance, you can step up, you can join the board. RSNO the same, but I think we should diversify these opportunities as best we can, and you blur the lines between the player group, between the staff, between the board. The creative ideas don't just come from one sector of the organisation. You know, the delivery doesn't just come. It's personal development, and there's huge amount of talent exists within orchestras, and I think it's incredibly important to give routes for that talent to get out and develop.
I would agree with that as well, and that's not something that just happens naturally. It's very much has to be the culture of an institution, and, you know, some orchestras are built up in a very sort of compartmentalized way, but we're lucky in that we don't have that. We mirror some of the structure that the orchestras in London have, where the musicians take certainly a little bit more responsibility of the whole running of the orchestra. And that kind of connects to one of the questions you said before, and how does it feel now? I feel, in some sense, I feel like I'm more in a band. It feels more like being, you know, part of my rock, pop, funk, experimental jazz group that I was in when I was 18 than, you know, National Orchestra of Scotland. And I, that's definitely something that it should be. That's a welcome change.
Definitely. So are there still recordings of this jazz funk rock band of when you were 18 by any chance? They could be put out as a Friday night. No, I definitely agree. And it's going to be, I think, not necessarily a bad thing that musicians are more involved in their artistic output of things. And I know in some orchestras on a global scale, there's sometimes a disconnect between administration and musician as well. So anything that breaks down those boundaries and everyone feels more included in the process, I think can only be a good thing. And as well, I can't even begin to imagine what the first concert's going to be like, partly from audiences being able to share the experiences again, but also I think the energy from musicians being able to collaborate and perform in the same way, partly potentially after being recharged and reinvigorated from a break, potentially, but also the fact that is not being able to do it will probably mean it's so much more special going forwards.
That's absolutely true. I'm imagining in my head already what that sound is going to be like. I think I remember it academically, but I don't, I've forgotten it a little bit emotionally, and I look forward to connecting to that again.
Massively. So obviously we have no idea how lockdown is going to look for the next 12 months or so. You would probably be starting to think about announcing next season's repertoire and concerts and general tours. How is this impacting your artistic planning for the future? Because obviously it's going to have to be quite nimble, I presume, and flexible as to what you can potentially do going forwards.
Well, actually, on the 7th of March, we launched our season. So we went to print. We got a lovely brochure, fantastic season, which I thought was great. We were a bit ahead of the curve, and yet now, of course, everything needs to be reassessed. So really what we're doing, I think there are concerts in the autumn that we know can happen. Our opening concert of the season was Beethoven 9. There's no way we're going to get a full chorus and a full orchestra together, I think, within the legislation we have. But, I mean, I like the idea. So we are planning alternates all the way through the autumn. Smaller orchestras, bigger orchestras. We're just banking ideas, and we'll bring them out when we can. I don't think these will be advertised as an alternate season. They'll be announced a week, 2 weeks in advance of when they happen. I like the idea that people's lives have changed. None of us are really planning what we're doing in 2 or 3 months. You plan what you're doing for this evening or maybe tomorrow. It's a whole new way. And what I like about that is we can begin to experiment with advertising through social media platforms. We can't do print advertising because by the time you send something to print, it's probably changed. How do we reach people? And right when I began at the RSNO, I was trying to question some things, and I said to one of the marketers, the leaflets we put out for concerts, what value, how do we assess what value they have? How do we assess the impact of these leaflets? And they said, well, take them away and see what happens. So now we can really assess, you take away print advertising, for example, and how do you reach people and what is the effect of that? What are people's responses and how do you learn from that? But I like the idea. Some of the best restaurants you ever go to, they have a menu of the day, and you book a table at that restaurant, you don't know what you're going to eat. You know it's going to be good. You know the kind of cooking they do, but you don't know what you're going to eat. So, this alternate season we're planning alongside in case we have to change, and we probably will, it's going to have more homegrown artists, I think, because of travel restrictions. It's going to be smaller repertoire, but it's going to be exciting stuff, I'm sure. And I'm absolutely certain, we've got people who've been subscribers for 60 years. They can remember concerts 60 years ago. I'd like to think 60 years from now, there'll be a young person now in 60 years will say, I will never forget my first concert. We couldn't sit in chairs. We had to sit on the floor. If there was only 100 people, we sat around the orchestra. We had this incredible experience. And people will have the most amazing experiences in a concert hall of music. It won't be the same, but they will be memorable. They will define, partly define how we got through this time. So it's exciting. It's challenging and it's frustrating and it drives you nuts some days, but it's... It's where we are. We can't change it, so we've got to embrace it.
Very true. And Davo, is it strange not having, say, pieces that you can look forward to playing during the season, or are you actually looking forward to not knowing and having something thrown on you last minute and having to learn and that side of the creative process?
Well, I have to say a bit of both. I realised that in my previous 10 years in the orchestra, I've gotten a bit too used to having a schedule which tells me where to be, when, and what to wear. I've woken up from that now, and I definitely look forward to that. I like the prospects of doing concerts that aren't marketed a long time in advance, because that also questions what are we actually selling? What is the main thing that is important? Is it just the repertoire? It never is, but sometimes we hide behind that. It challenges us to show more what the whole institution is and what it's about and, why it's here and why it should continue. So I'm certainly looking forward to that, going absolutely blind into concerts. Hopefully not too much, but,
More than 6 hours notice might be nice, give you a time to get around the notes.
Six, 6 hours will do. That's fine.
Exactly. And I think it's fascinating that you were mentioning about print advertising and its effect in Alistair and seeing how that looks. And I remember I was in London last year and went to a meeting talking about advertising and digital marketing and these things. And afterwards went to go get the tube back to get the train north to Yorkshire. And there was one of the posters on the tube platform for a classical music concert. And huge, huge thing, must have cost a fortune. And the entire platform was stood there on phones, not looking at the sort of paying the blind bit of notice to this really expensive bit of marketing.
That's brilliant.
It's, yeah. Somewhere I've got a photo of it. It was absolutely spectacular, sort of proving a point of you could have got the same reaction from £4 on Facebook adverts, which is something very different. So obviously you've been very keen on pushing engagement from your audience and talking to them, finding out what their reactions are. How have they reacted to all this content you've done, and what sort of responses have you had, and are you engaging them in dialogue rather than just constantly telling them what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, we get so many different ways of dialogue. We've got two or three people on phones talking to our subscribers. And one thing that has been really wonderful, so much of our audience, of course, from an older demographic, and they've been on the phone telling them how to get on to Zoom or telling them how to get on to Friday Night Club on a Friday night. And we've had a tremendous response back from these people. It was great. This week we got a mention in Scottish Parliament when Fiona Hislop, Cabinet Secretary, said recommended to the Scottish MSPs that they watch the Friday Night Club on the RSNO. So that's all sorts of different comments coming through our social media channels. I think old-fashioned phone calls have still got a place. You know, it's just nice to talk to people. And yeah, in all sorts of ways, Zoom calls, we're keeping in touch with our audiences and communicating with them. It's important. I mean, it's a community. I'd never see performance as a one-way street, you know, where you sit there giving out something. It's a connection. It's a community. It's that's really what's, I think, special about the RSNO and many other orchestras too. You know, you live within a community. That community goes way beyond the stage.
Very true. On one of the previous podcasts, I was talking to Amanda McLeod about classical music and everything. And I think she mentioned it was Aberdeen Football Club had apparently been just ringing their season ticket holders for a chat. And with absolutely no agenda, just, how are you doing? How are you finding lockdown? Anything we can do? And it's this unique way of actually getting to know your audience and your supporters, but also it shows the care and intent, which I think all organisations can sometimes be guilty of not prioritising.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, digital technology has got so much potential, but it can cause isolation. You know, people live on a screen through social media, and that's not real human contact. So, I mean, I think again, as time evolves, we'll find ways to really connect through culture on digital platforms. But until then, I think, you know, human contact is crucial.
Definitely. You know? And Devoe, apart from being beaten by a 9-year-old, what has been your favourite part of engagement from audiences that you've had?
Well, it's one of those that Alistair mentioned. I've had phone calls with some members of the community orchestra. And one of them, I think we've chatted 3 times now and had hours of talk. And it's been really, really good to get to know this person. This is a person who's recently gotten involved as a listener of the RSNO, and to hear their backstory about as a young person having listened to the RSNO, being away for a long time and then coming back. I think that's one of my favorites. It's kind of a shame that you can't do that all, you know, to everyone. But over a long career in an orchestra, you certainly get to meet quite a lot of people. And I can only second what Alistair says, that is so much part of what the culture of an orchestra is. It's not just the performing, it's the community all around it. It's really important and something to be preserved.
Certainly is, and it's great to see. So obviously you've got quite a few things coming up which you may or may not be able to say, but and also obviously that things are very flexible at the moment, so you're not really sure what is happening. What plans do you currently have that you're looking forward to that you can talk about?
Well, there's lots of plans. I mean, I think the first time we gather musicians together, we'll be doing we were meant to do schools concerts, we're meant to do dementia work, meant to do a nursery school concert. So I think we'll be recording all them and sending them out through digital platforms until we can get an audience. As soon as we can get an audience in a room, we'll do, if we can get 10 people in a room, we'll do 5 musicians and 5 audiences. If that's 20, we'll get a 10-piece brass ensemble together with 10 audience. But I think it will start largely with recording, and then it will grow as we're allowed to grow. And take it from there. I mean, just keep responding. I think it's I'd love someone to give me more of a heads up when it'll all be, you know, but Boris hasn't been entirely helpful on that front. But it's just, you know, what I'm looking forward to is getting musicians in a room again, however many, whenever that is, and just making music again.
Certainly. And how about you, Devor?
Yeah, that is certainly the thing that I am absolutely 100% mostly looking forward to. And I look forward to it, even just having one person listening. I can tell you, since because I'm on the artistic committee as well, that many things have been discussed. Lots of crazy and even crazier ideas to start earlier and get out, both for our own sanity and, you know, to get everything rolling again. But it wouldn't make sense to talk too specifically about any of that at the moment, for the same reason that Alistair says that it will probably change every day.
I dreamed the other night. I woke up feeling really good because in my dream I'd just been given a second trumpet job and I was playing and there was music around me and you know I was living in all this noise and then you wake up and you realise, well, that day's not quick. I'm not going to take a second trumpet job or any trumpet job, but it was just in my dream I'd been in the middle of all this noise again, all this music again. I mean it's just got such a kind of visceral impact. Live music, being a full orchestra, it's amazing.
Yeah. We keep a spare trumpet around just in case he changes his mind and wants to join us. So, anytime, Alistair, anytime.
Exactly. If you need some extra support, maybe it comes into the artistic programming, just an offstage trumpet every now and then.
Sure, surprise. Sometime in this season, Alistair will stand up and play a concerto. We don't know when, he's just going to pop up and then there's an idea.
It saves all the international touring problems of getting a soloist from abroad. All the answers are there for Alistair.
I played once with the Anatole trumpet section. I was fourth trumpet in a fanfare for the announcement of the season on the 7th of March, which was fantastic, playing with the lads. They were amazing. So that's the extent of it.
Oh, fantastic. Well, for anyone who's watching or listening and wants to connect with RSNO and sees what you're doing online and hear the music, where can they find you on the internet?
YouTube, Facebook, put in RSNO, put in Friday Night Club, put in Wednesday Challenge, put in Sunday Sounds, and it'll come up. It's dead easy to find. And there's a whole bank of material now from previous weeks. It's all there. And if you want to see Jarvi or Sondergaard or, whoever, there's some great music there. And I say, all the performances you see, they're just live, unedited performances. They were never meant to be broadcast as a glossy broadcast. It's just great music making. And can I say, actually, I think this Friday is an amazing event. And again, it was something that we happened by accident. The conductor cancelled. We decided not to book another one. We didn't really have any cameras. There's only 3 static camera shots. We wondered whether we should be broadcasting it or not. But watch it this Friday night. It's an amazing piece of music making and an incredible tribute to the musicianship of the players of the RSNO.
Fantastic. I think that's a wonderful note to end on as well. So that's this Friday coming up. Definitely worth checking out. The website, which has all the information, is rsno.org.uk. And also, if you want to watch or listen back to any of the other podcast recordings, including with Anne Majette, who's truly fascinating. We had YCATS last week, the week before as well, which is really, really good chat. All of those are on the website, which is david-taylor.org. And all the social media for that is david_taylor_UK as well. Well, thank you so much for listening and watching if you've been a part of this. And also, Alistair and Devor, thank you so much for your time. It's really appreciated.
Likewise, David.
Fantastic. And I hope you all have a good day. Thank you.